Success is overrated. Failure is really where it's at. Failure is the parent of success. Success is the beneficiary of failure. Success owes its very existence to failure. Without failure, there can be no success. As I look back over my own life, I can easily say that I have learned more from my failures than I have from my successes. And when I think about it, many of my successes were actually the results of a long line of failures that came first. It's probably that way in your life too. Someone once quipped, "We're all failures. At least the best of us are." And Moses is a person who illustrates that statement beautifully. Moses is celebrated as one of the greatest leaders the world has ever known. But before he was a big success, he was a tragic failure. And it was his failing that God used to mold him into the kind of person that God could then use to accomplish great things. We began a study through the book of Exodus last week, and I want to review what has happened so far. We are in the book of Exodus, and if you have your Bible, you can turn to Exodus chapter 1. We'll be picking up in Exodus 2, verse 11 in a moment, but as we review what we've looked at so far, the opening verses of the book, we find the Israelites, or the Hebrews as they're also called, living in Egypt. Jacob and his family, numbering about 70 people, had moved to Egypt at the invitation of the Pharaoh himself after Joseph, one of Jacob's sons, had saved the land of Egypt from a severe famine through his God-inspired leadership. Joseph became a national hero in Egypt at that time. But some 300 years have passed since then, and the memory of what Joseph had done for Egypt, along with the goodwill that he earned for his people with the Egyptians, has disappeared. To make matters worse, the Israelite population has exploded. That small group of 70 people has swelled to over a million. The Israelites are quickly becoming a nation inside of the nation of Egypt. Well, a new Pharaoh has come to power who felt it was critical to the national security of Egypt to control the Israelites. He wanted to keep the Israelites in Egypt because his country had become dependent upon their labor, but he believes that it is essential that the Israelites be heavily controlled. So his first action is to severely oppress the Israelites, enslaving them, working them ruthlessly in hard labor. But the more the Egyptians oppress the Israelites, the more the Israelite population grows. So the Pharaoh's next step was to attempt to actively control their population by making it a law that all male babies born to Israelite women be killed. Only the girl babies were allowed to live. About this time, an Israelite couple had a baby boy born to them who they recognized as a special child. They refused to hand him over to the Egyptians to be destroyed. Instead, they hid him for the first 3 months, and then when they could no longer keep him hidden, his mother placed him in a waterproof basket among the reeds of the Nile River. The providential hand of God was obviously at work, because the Pharaoh's own daughter happened to be going down to the Nile River that day to bathe, and she found the basket with the baby boy inside. And when she saw the crying baby, she couldn't bring herself to have the baby killed. Instead, she wanted to keep the baby and raise him as her own child. Raise him as her own child. The baby's big sister had been watching from a short distance, and when she saw that the Egyptian princess wanted to keep the baby, she ran up and she asked her if she'd like her to find one of the Hebrew women who could nurse the baby for her. The princess ended up hiring the baby's own mother to nurse him. And then when the baby was somewhere between 3 and 4 years old, he was given back to the Egyptian princess to grow up as her son in the palace of Egypt. She named the baby Moses. As we pick the story up today, Moses has spent the first 40 years of his life living as the adopted son of the princess of Egypt. Now, from the world's perspective, Moses would have had about as good a life as a person could dream of having. Egypt was a superpower nation at that time in history. It had tremendous wealth. It possessed one of the most advanced and admired cultures in all of the world. The culture of ancient Egypt is still one that we marvel at even in our own day. And the remains of that culture are just a small fraction of the grandeur and the majesty that it was in its active state. Well, during this time of Moses' life, he was raised as an Egyptian and taught virtually all aspects of Egyptian culture: the religion, philosophy, worldview, customs, history, science, technology, language. He was an Egyptian in every aspect of his life but one: his heart. He was a Hebrew at heart. We have to guess a lot about this part of his life, but he was certainly taught a great deal by his mother and father during those first 3 or 4 years of life before being returned to the Egyptian princess to be her son. It's hard to know how much a small child of 3 or 4 would be able to retain or understand, but his parents thought it absolutely essential that he know who he was and where he had come from. He was a Hebrew. He was an Israelite. He was a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God of the universe had made a special covenant promise with his ancestors to be their God and they his people. Moses was a part of the chosen people of God. The great Israelite leader, Joseph, had saved both the Egyptians and the Israelites many years ago. That's why they were in Egypt at this time. And before he died, that great leader Joseph told his people to never forget the promise in Genesis 50:24, God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses' parents taught him everything they could in that short time they had with him. And what they taught their son, as little as it might seem at the time, set the ultimate course of his life. He was destined to become the man God would use to lead his people to freedom and back to the land God had promised to them. Now, a side note, mom and dad, teach your children about the Lord. We need to instill those eternal truths in them while they're under their care. Pour it into them during the short time that you have them in your homes. We're not guaranteed that our children are going to turn out exactly the way that we would like them to be, but we are fools to not take full advantage of the opportunities and the responsibilities that God has placed before us as parents. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it." I can't think of a better example of this proverb than the case of Moses. Moses was going to grow up in a culture that was very different from that of his origins, a culture and a people that were actually hostile and abusive toward his own people. You too are having to hand your children over to a culture that is sometimes hostile, disrespectful, opposed to your beliefs and your values. What Moses' parents instilled in him stayed with him. What you instill in your children is going to stay with them too. And it's going to make a difference in how they live their lives. God's truths will never leave them. The things Moses' parents had taught him as a small child remained with him and made him curious and watchful of the Hebrew people for his entire life. In Exodus 2:11, where we'll be picking the story up today, it says that Moses was watching his own people, the Israelites, at their hard labor. See, Moses knew he was a Hebrew rather than an Egyptian. Moses knew that these enslaved, brutalized people that have lived in these labor camps were his ancestors. These people that the Egyptians looked at as little more than animals were his people. Somewhere living in all of that squalor of the Israelite tents were his own mom and dad and brother and sister. People that he has likely not seen since he was 3 or 4 years old. He knows all of that. And I believe that sometime during these first 40 years of his life, his heart began to stir within him about his people, the Hebrews. Their brutal oppression by the Egyptians began to eat away at him. Along with that, a strong sense of calling and mission began to come alive inside of him. He knew it was an insane thought, but he believed deep in his heart that he had been given a special calling and mission from God to rescue his people from their awful plight. He didn't know how he was going to accomplish that. All he knew was that this was his purpose, his mission, his calling. This is what burned in the heart of Moses. And so we pick up in verse 11 of Exodus 2. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. One day, while Moses is watching the Israelites, his people, at their work, under the cruelty of their slave masters, a particular incident catches his attention. One of the Hebrew slave masters begins mercilessly beating one of the Hebrew workers. The brutality of it is more than Moses can stand. He can no longer sit back and watch what's happening to his people and do nothing about it. All of a sudden, before he fully realizes what he's even doing, he looks left and right and kills the Egyptian. And then hides the corpse, quickly burying him in the sand. Now it's obvious from Moses' behavior that he knows what he has done is wrong. He's glancing this way and that. Hides the corpse. He's just committed murder. There's no way to gloss over that. He's just murdered this man. It was a very foolish act of passion. He let himself get caught up in this emotional frenzy to see that justice is done, and he ends up botching it badly with this vigilante response. I mean, what was his next step going to be? Where was he going to go with this course of action that he's taken? I mean, was this supposed to be the first step in some kind of Israelite rebellion against the Egyptians that he's going to lead? He didn't know. He has no idea. He has just lashed out without thinking it through at all. And now he has created a real mess for himself. Verse 13, it says, the next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? And the man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. Moses' worst fears about what he had done are now realized. The very next day, he's again watching his people, the Hebrews, at their hard labor when a fight breaks out between two of them. And Moses tries to step in and break up the fight. He asks the one in the wrong why he's hitting his Hebrew brother. They suffer so much under the hand of the Egyptians. Why would they ever treat one another the same way? And the Hebrew man looks at Moses with disdain and he asks him, who made you ruler and judge over us? In other words, who do you think you are? Mind your own business. You're not our leader. Who are you to judge us? You live a life of luxury and ease in the royal courts of Egypt while we sweat and scrape for survival out in this hot sun. And although neither this man nor Moses realized the prophetic nature of what this man said, one day Moses will be their leader and judge. But it'll be according to God's time clock, using God's ways, not Moses's. The man then drives a stake into the heart of Moses by asking him sarcastically, "Are you thinking of killing me now, like you killed the Egyptian?" The story of what Moses had done to the Egyptian has apparently spread throughout the Hebrew community. It's only a matter of time before the Egyptians hear about it. He's got to get out of there, and soon, if Pharaoh finds out what he's done, he'll be killed. So Moses flees Egypt, running for his life as a fugitive, wanted for murder. Moses is reeling at this point. I mean, he had treasured in his own heart this sense of calling and mission to rescue his people from their slavery. Then he acted out in passion the day before, foolishly killing this Egyptian who'd been beating one of the workers. And now when he attempts to be the peacemaker and reason with these two Hebrew men who are fighting, his overtures and his leadership are rejected in the strongest possible terms. He's failed terribly. I mean, he's probably saying to himself, "How could I have been so stupid? What have I done? What was I thinking? I've ruined everything. I've ruined everything." When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. So here's Moses now on the backside of nowhere in relationship to Egypt. This looks nothing like the vision that he'd been carrying in his heart. This is not what he believed he had been called to. This was not the plan. He's rescued no one. He's freed no one. He's led no one to any promised land. He's lost everything. He's lost everything. His home, his reputation, it's all gone. It's easy for us to imagine the sense of failure that is gripping this man's heart in this moment. But the Lord, he has a way of keeping us from completely giving up. He has a way of keeping us moving, even when we have come to the point where we just want to lay down and die. We say, "I'm done, I quit, I give up." And the Lord brings something into our life to keep us going. And that's what's about to happen in Moses' life. Look at verse 16. It says, "Now a priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock." Do you see what the Lord has done here for Moses? Moses is this broken, disillusioned, failed human being on the backside of nowhere when the Lord brings a situation into his life that forces him to keep moving and unknowingly tap into that very thing that God put into his heart, which he thought he had lost or misunderstood. This is big. Here's the situation. Moses is sitting by a well in the middle of the desert. I mean, what possible purpose could there be in that? Moses is thirsty. He stops to get a drink. And while he is taking a breather, these 7 young women come along with their father's flocks to water them. But some mean-spirited shepherds come up and bully these women and drive them and their flocks away from the water. We learn a little later in the story that this bullying by these shepherds has been the usual thing that's happened to these women day in and day out. That is until today. Today, Moses is present, and when he sees these women being bullied, he comes to their rescue, standing up to these bullying shepherds and waters the ladies' flocks for them. Now look at the way it's worded in verse 17. This is no accident. It says, Moses got up and came to their rescue. That word is also translated, he came and saved them. He came and delivered them. What had God put into Moses' heart back in Egypt? He knew he was to rescue his people. He knew in his heart that is what he had been born for. But when everything came unraveled, it was really hard to maintain his grip on that. And now, at the very moment when Moses wants to say, I'm done, I quit, I give up, I have failed, I'm ruined, the Lord puts a situation in front of him where he has to rescue some people. I believe this seemingly insignificant thing is a very important thing in Moses' life, because it is the very thing that keeps the fire going in Moses' heart. It's not a big flame. It's more like a tiny little pilot light right now. But it's going, because it's going to take the next 40 years out on the backside of nowhere before that fire is burning, raging hot again in Moses' heart. But right here, in this situation, the Lord prevents that flame from being blown out in Moses' heart by the winds of failure and discouragement. The Lord has done the same thing in my life many times. Just when I have come to the end of my rope and I am ready to give up, when I have come to that place where I am questioning everything I thought I knew about who I am and what my life is supposed to be for, the Lord will bring some situation along that prevents that flame in my heart from being snuffed out by the winds of failure and discouragement. Where I'm forced to unexpectedly use my gifts and calling to help someone, like Moses here. Might be a simple note of encouragement from someone. It might be a glimpse at how God has used me in someone's life in a way that I had totally forgotten or overlooked before. It might be a special insight God gives at a key moment where he pulls back the cover of my life and says, see, that's what I'm doing. It can come in many different ways, but it always comes just when it's needed most. The Lord is good to his children. And that's what he's doing with Moses right here. And the Lord has still more to give Moses here. Not only has the Lord made sure that the flame in Moses' heart not been snuffed out by failure and discouragement, but he's also going to bless him with a family out here on the backside of nowhere. A family where he will be loved and cared for, and he can heal and grow and learn and be prepared by God for a mission that he can't even imagine at this point. I love the way the Lord reaches into Moses' life in the middle of this terrible failure and crisis, and he ministers to him in these very important and key ways. To keep this man from being lost. Verse 18, it says, When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, "Why have you returned so early today?" See, the usual thing is these shepherds would run them off, so watering the flocks was an all-day ordeal for them usually. They're home early today. So the father goes, "What happened? This is unusual that you're back so soon." And they answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." "And where is he?" he asked his daughters. "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, "I have become an alien in a foreign land." The name Moses gives to his son is revealing, Gershom, which meant, "I have become an alien in a foreign land." He's a stranger in a strange land. But he's not alone. His God is there, and his God has also put him in a family, because this is his family for the next 40 years. These people. In closing this morning, I'm reminded of Proverbs 19:2. "It's not good to have zeal without knowledge, nor to be hasty and miss the way." Moses is a person who missed the way through his own zeal. See, we can have a lot of vision, but if that vision is not birthed by the revelation of God, and then carried out according to the plan and methods of God, it can be a disaster. It matters the way it's done as much as what is done. God has a way He wants things done. Thomas Hodgkins, the famous physician who is credited with first documenting what has come to be known as Hodgkin's disease, said about failures, "They are God's own tool for carving some of the finest outlines in the character of His children." Moses is a beautiful example of this truth. Moses has failed terribly. He's had to flee Egypt as a man wanted for murder, some deliverer. But over the course of the next 40 years, God's going to carve some beautiful character into the life of this man as a result of that failure. And in our lives, our failures are used by the Lord in the same way, to carve into us a beautiful character. The humble, God-trusting nature that is grown in us through our failures is priceless. We've heard it before, but it's good to hear it again. God brings beauty out of the ashes of our lives.